bright-eyed, wide-awake Christians on a Sunday morning. A hearty, hearty good morning. It is good to be with you all. It is always good to not just to see each other, but to worship God together, to give Him thanks for all the blessings that we've enjoyed this week, and to remember the things that are true. Our lesson today is going to be centered on Psalm 46. If you want to open a Bible, if you've brought one, that'd be excellent. If you have someone sitting next to you who has one, you can share with them or at least look over their shoulder and pretend like you're not. We'll be in Psalm 46. I think it's a very important practice for us to periodically and regularly turn our attention to the Psalms. We have a lot of needs in our life, and we think that sometimes we just need a direct answer. How should the church operate about how it uses its money, or how it treats its people, or how should we operate with sin when there's sin in the church, or what do I need to do for forgiveness of sin, or any of these things? And we can look in the New Testament to find, you know, here's what you ought to do. There's a lot of here's what you need to do as God's people. There's not a lot of here's what you need to do in the Psalms. It's not a book of instructions. It's not a book of law. The Psalms are a book of prayers and songs. It is the worship book of the Bible. And as much as we have all these things that need doing, there are also thoughts that need thinking, and emotions that need felt in God's presence. And so I don't think that we should ever wander very far from the book of Psalms, to read it and to remember who God is, what God is deserving of, and the hope that we have. Every emotion can be found in the book of Psalms, and it's in its right place. And Psalm 46 is a psalm that reminds us of the peace of God. That's what we're going to be looking at this morning. To start, I'd like us to read the psalm from start to finish, which is not so daunting a task. It's only 11 verses. You never know with the book of Psalms. You could open up to one of them and it'd be pages long, or just one verse. But today we're somewhere in the middle. This is Psalm 46, starting at the beginning. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, and she shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, and the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. This is Psalm 46. It is a psalm that reminds us of the power of God, of the nearness of God. And it's one that offers us peace. There is an invitation in this one. And you might be thinking, well, it's not the second sermon yet. We're not allowed to have an invitation. But Psalm 46 would disagree with you. Let's look at the first few verses to begin. He starts by saying that God is our refuge and our strength. A refuge is a safe place to go. It's not a remarkable thing to think about. We've had some big storms through here this last week, though. And it is an important thing to have a refuge, a safe place. It's one that we take for granted a lot because a lot of our houses are very sturdy, safe places to be. But when you lived at a time when homes were not made of concrete and steel and foundations, or worse still, if you were living in a tent, huge thunderstorm with wind and rain is not something that you look forward to. This psalm, though, reminds us of what real strength is all about. We have safety in our lives, not because we live in houses that are built to code. We have safety in our lives, not because we have enough money in our bank accounts or because we have all the things that we might want. We have safety in our lives because God is our strength, a very present help in trouble. God is not far from any one of us. It's what the Apostle Paul preached in Athens in Acts chapter 17. He's not far from any one of us. And when we are in trouble, we, his people, are in trouble, it says in verse 1, he's very present to help. God is nearby. Verses 2 and 3, it's poetic language to describe everything going to chaos. All the things that we can rely on that are consistent in our lives, when everything is disturbed, God is there and God remains. It says in verses 2 and 3, we will not fear though the earth gives way. If you've ever felt an earthquake, it's an unsettling thing. Everything that should be sturdy and reliable suddenly is not. It says, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea. I've seen a lot of things jump up and down in my life. I've never seen a mountain do that. Verse 3, though its waters roar and foam, though there's a tremendous storm, verse 2 reminds us, we will not fear. This is a psalm about faith. It's about trust in God, that we believe that God is and that he is who he says he is, that he is there for us. He is present, as the psalm says. And because we have faith, in verse 2, we are not afraid. Faith and fear are set against each other. It's not that faithful people are never afraid, but when it comes down to the line, our trust in God is more reliable to us than the things we are afraid of. In verses 2 and 3, it's poetic language, it's general language that's meant to be a spot that we can fill. Maybe you're not so worried about the mountains jumping into the sea. Maybe you're not so worried about the ocean roaring and foaming. We don't live very close to the ocean. But when these things that are foundational to our lives get disrupted, that's when we really need the Lord. When the health of someone in our family who has always been strong, always been the pillar of our family, when they are in trouble, when they're given a diagnosis, that's when we need a very present help. When our finances that have never been a problem before in our lives are suddenly in catastrophe, that's when we need a very present help. Whenever our relationship with God that is normally so strong is cast into shades of doubt, or we're struggling with some sin and we are wrecked by the damage that our sin has done in our lives, that's when we need a very present help. When everything is disrupted, that's when we're reminded of the peace of God. Read with me at verse 4. There is a river. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, and she shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter, but he utters his voice, and the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. When everything seems disrupted in our lives, we're reminded of the blessing of God. And it's described in a few different images here. He says there is a river. He says there is a city of God. And the morning dawns when the Lord is there. Can you think of more peaceful things? When I was young and growing up, I guess I'm still growing up, but when I was young and growing up, I would go with my family down to the Missouri River where it flows into the Ozarks. There's these big bluffs of limestone, and there's the Missouri River. It flows through Arkansas, so even though it says Missouri in the name, you can understand it. And it's peaceful. It's not like the Colorado or the Red River. It's treacherous and dangerous and murky. It's peaceful. A river is not just where you go fishing with your friends. It's not just where you catch crawdads. A river is where there is enough to be provided for. There's water to drink. There's food to eat, because everything comes to the river for life. When this psalm talks about a river in the city of God, it's about provision. When everything is disrupted in our lives, we're reminded that God provides for us. Every day that the sun comes up, God is there for us. The river that constantly flows and never runs out of water reminds us that God never runs out for us. It's described as the city of God, where the Lord is in the midst of her. The morning dawns. There's nothing like the sunrise. Even after a long night, alarm clocks will ruin us, I think, in some ways. They're really, really good. But you have a clock in your room at night, and you can always tell what time it is, so you can always measure where things are. But if you didn't have a clock at night, like, let's say, the author of Psalm 46, some nights seem endless. Maybe there's a horrible storm, or maybe someone's sick, or maybe you can't sleep. My family have had a number of those nights lately. Not lately, actually. It's been several months. She's doing very well now. But there was a time where we did not sleep very much in my house. And it seems like those nights will never end. You check the clock, and it's only been 30 minutes. And you're like, oh, man. Check the clock later, and it's only been an hour. You're like, it's 2 a.m. When is the sun going to rise? But on every single day, every night like that, the sun rises. And when the sun rises, the world wakes up, everything comes back to life, and things are the way they ought to be. And when everything is disrupted for our lives, as this psalm describes, it says, God will help her when the morning dawns. The Lord is the light of the world. And His appearance in the world and in our lives is like the sunrise. It gives us hope. These images, they might remind us of the ultimate hope of God's people. In Revelation 22, one of the final glimpses that John sees as he's given a glimpse into the Lord's plan for redemption is a city with a river flowing through it where God is there. In Revelation 22, in the first few verses, it says, "The angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the streets of the city. Also, on either side of the river, the tree of life with its 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit each month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be anything accursed, but the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it, and His servants will worship Him. They will see His face. His name will be on their foreheads, and night will be no more. They will need no light of lamp or sun, for the Lord their God will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever." This is our hope. This is everything that our lives are pointed to. And it's worth mentioning this, I think especially. When we think about psalms that offer us hope or peace, when we think about the ultimate redemption, the hope that awaits us in heaven, we have to remember where our hope actually lies. Because the gospel that is taught to us in our Bibles is not motivational talk with a little bit of Jesus in it. It is not self-help with a little bit of Jesus in it, where we think there's just better things somewhere beyond. Our hope is not to live in some wonderful city where the streets are gold and everything is comfortable. Those are all added details. What is the hope of the city of God? But as it says here in verse 3, the Lord is there. What makes the city of heaven so grand? What makes the river of life worth going to? God is there. That the throne of God and the Lamb is there, and they will see His face. That's why I want to go to heaven. I've not been, you know, self-denying my whole life just to get a glimpse of pearly gates. It's not about the pearly gates. It's not about the streets of gold. It's that the Lord is there. The Lord who has made all of us, who has loved us, who has been faithful every day of our lives, is waiting for us there. That's the hope. That's why we have peace. These are not just beautiful pictures or images for us. They point us to the real issue. In Psalm 46, This is what the psalm focuses on as well. Verse 5, God is in the midst of that city. Or in verse 7, the Lord of hosts is with us. That is peace. Peace is not a river or a city. It is the Lord with us. The last few verses of this psalm, they end this way. It's an invitation. The first couple verses of this last part, verses 8 and 9, is the writer of this psalm giving an invitation. And then verses 10 and 11 is God himself speaking. 8 and 9 says, "Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire." God is the end of all violence and struggle. When we look forward to the hope of redemption, heaven forever with God, we're not hoping for more and more battles, more and more strife, more bloodshed. No, in the end, there is no strife. There is no division. There's no need for war, because the Lord will bring peace, because he will be on the throne. Verse 8 is the invitation, and I'm not going to... You can always come forward. That's always on the table. That's not exactly what this is for. Verse 8 says, "Come, behold the works of the Lord." When we read the Bible, it is not just to learn the facts. It's not just to know who Abraham was or who Moses was or who Isaiah was. We read Scripture to see the works of God and to know who he is. Verse 8 says, "Come, look at the works of the Lord. Look at what God has done in the past, and so you can have certainty about what God will do in the future." We might remember the Lord who saw Hagar in Genesis chapter 16. There's this woman who's been mistreated. She's been thrown into a life that she didn't ask for, and she runs away from Abraham and Sarah. She's pregnant with a child, and she thinks that no one on the earth cares about her or knows her. And who sees her crying in the wilderness? The Lord does. He comforts her like no one else could. That's true. That happened. But it also informs us. When we are distressed, when we feel as though no one in the world cares for us, there is a God in heaven who sees. We may not have the exact situation of Hagar. We can't expect that our children are going to have all these promises that God gave to Ishmael. But we can be certain that there is a God in heaven who sees us when no one else does. He says in verse 8, "Behold the works of the Lord." Do you remember what the Lord did in Egypt? "Let my people go," Moses said to Pharaoh. When God's people were enslaved, he broke their chains and set them free. And when we feel enslaved, when we are enslaved to sin and darkness, when we feel trapped making the same stupid, sinful mistakes over and over, God sets us free. He has the power to do that. We look, as it says in verse 8, "Behold the works of the Lord." Remember what he has done in the past to know who he is now and forever. It is the Lord who works for us, and much greater than he ever has in Christ. These last couple verses, we'll look at them and then we'll be done. It says, this is the Lord speaking in verse 10, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress." These first couple words have stuck in the memory of God's people for a long time. Be still and know. Whenever you're anxious, anybody here get really anxious or nervous and is just excellent at sitting still? Some people are capable of that. I know some people in my life that when they get really worked up, they turn into like a lizard. They don't even move at all. They don't blink, and you're like, something's terribly wrong. But for most of us, when we get anxious, when there's something really eating at us, you cannot sit still. When your mind is troubled, your body reacts the same way. Someone is fidgeting, or they're bouncing their leg at the table, or they're hurrying around doing every single chore in the house because something's on their mind. And God himself speaks in this verse, and he says, "Be still when we are troubled. And God knows that we have all sorts of things to reasonably be troubled about in our lives. He says, "Be still and know that I am God." There is, of course, a time for action. We have to live the life. We have to walk our faith. But there is, of course, a time to stop our nervous going back and forth. And in stillness, remember who God is. Remember that He will make all things right. As He says in verse 10, "I will be exalted. I will be exalted." Things are not the way they ought to be right now in the world. They're not the way they ought to be in our lives. We still struggle with temptation and sin, and that ought not to be. The world is filled with strife and violence and injustice, and that ought not to be. But in the stillness, when we remember who God is, we must remember that God will be exalted. There will be a day when God is on His throne and no one else stands up to make a claim. The rest of our week might be busy. We might be hurrying here and there. We have things to do. We have righteous, good works to do. But maybe especially on Sunday, when we come in here and we're going to sit together, we're going to pray together, we're going to sing together, maybe now we are still. And while we're stepped away from all the noise outside, we remember that the Lord is God. When He speaks, everyone else has to listen. In verse 11, "The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress." This is perfect peace. Peace is not in having all the things that we want. Peace is not in having the things that we think will secure us in our life. God gives us all sorts of good things. But the only thing that is reliable, actually, is knowing that God is with us. Through thick and thin, through faith and doubt, through sin and repentance, the Lord is with us. And so we have peace. Let's all pray together.